Yes. Is there a nod to Refused in there?
There is a actual sample of Refused.
Yeah, right. Okay, yeah. Yeah. Well, because I'm pretty sure that that's a sample as well. You know, that
right.
Phil, welcome to the Question and the Answers podcast. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Good. Hey, thanks so much for being here. So this is Phil Smith, who goes under the moniker Eugenius as his hip hop and rap project. You've been putting out albums as this project for over 10 years now. But what I thought was really intriguing about you when I found out about you is that you have a background in both metal and punk. So I thought it'd be kind of cool to talk to you not only about, you know, this latest record that you're putting out, as well as some of the production work that you're working on with other projects, but, you know, kind of explore what it was like to have come from, you know, the background in punk and metal and how that's led to like a transition into the hip hop and rap world. Cause that's like a world that I appreciate. And I certainly love a lot of like rap and hip hop out there, but I just don't know much about like that scene, you know, in terms of like what it must be like to be an independent artist. And I'd love to, you know, pick your brain about like, what are some of the similarities and what are some of the differences? But welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Now you're from the Cincinnati, Ohio area, right?
Yes, I am. Born and raised.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I was mentioning to you before we got on the air that, you know, I can't remember if I've actually been through Cincinnati or not. I know I've been to Ohio, but, if memory serves, I think I've only been to Columbus and, I think Cleveland once, but I think that was it. I mean, tell me a little bit about like the Cincinnati scene growing up. Like, what was that like for you?
It was pretty interesting, actually. You know, I went to a lot of shows, a lot of hardcore metal shows. There was a lot of interesting places that we, you know, the typical VFW halls and random church auditoriums and things like that. You know, spent a lot of time in Dayton and Indianapolis, Louisville, surrounding areas. It was a good time and a great way to, you know, ruin my life and punk rock.
But yeah, you kind of got your feet wet early playing music. I know that one of the bands that you were in kind of early on was this band called Corpus Christi, which was what it sounds like a kind of a Christian metalcore band, but they were signed to Victory Records for a time. Right. And so, you know, tell me about like your experiences early on, you know, playing music in those type of bands.
So when I first started out playing like punk rock in high school, and from that I graduated to playing more heavier music like metal and hardcore and stuff like that. Around 2009, I joined Corpus Christi. Shortly after that, we got signed to Victory Records and got to do a lot of touring. Saw a lot of the country, more than I probably want to. gained a lot of good experience. It was a very, you know, interesting, you know, insight into being a signed band. some good, some very bad. After that, I played in a couple like local punk and hardcore bands, and then I started doing Eugenius, which is kind of born out of the stigma of being the only black guy in a hardcore scene, or like, you know, one of the only black guys in a hardcore scene where you kind of get labeled that. And so that kind of becomes your identity. So I kind of wanted to do something to shake that and to kind of just test myself to see if, you know, it would be something that I want to do and something that I find interesting and challenging. And it was, because I guess I'm still doing it.
That's tight. You know, I am curious about, like, you mentioned, you know, you mentioned seeing more of the country than you thought that you should, or something like that. Right. I'm trying to remember exactly what you said, but like, what do you mean by that? Like, I mean, was it like some bad experiences, or like, I mean,
well, you know, I don't know if like how many tours you've been on, but usually, you know, when people say touring, you think, you know, LA, New York, Chicago, when really it's every like butthole in every state,
right?
Every dark alley that, you know, rock clubs are usually in the nicest part of town, so usually that's the only part of town you see. And so, you know, it was a good getting out and seeing the country, but, you know, not right. exactly the highlights of the country.
Yeah, I mean, you might be actually one of the only people that I've actually had a real conversation with that has been affiliated with Victory Records before. I mean, Victory Records, like, you know, storied, you know, hardcore label. And I mean, there's plenty of bands from Victory that I'm a huge fan of, you know, but I am curious about your experience with that label. And, you know, because they're not really around anymore, I don't think. I think that they kind of folded shop. And I know that there was like some problems, from what I understand, about the people who ran that label. I mean, I don't necessarily want you to air any dirty laundry right now or anything like that, because that's probably going to take up an entire episode's worth of conversation. But I'd be curious to know like what your experience was being in that band on that label, and if it was like mostly positive or mostly negative or what.
Well, first off, like, Victory Records was the label that got me into hardcore. Earth Crisis, like the first hardcore band I listened to. And, you know, you back in the day where you used to get CD and they have, okay, if you like this band, take out all the other bands. And that's how I, you know, found about other bands. So it was really a special thing to get signed to Victory. Like, it was a pretty special time in my life. Actually being on Victory, it was fine. I mean, we were kind of a lower level band. And I know lots of bands out there that have lots of horror stories and can probably divulge a lot more than I can, but it was fine. Like, in the position that Corpus Christi was in, it was kind of the metalcore boom of, you know, the late 2000s, where labels were kind of just snatching up any the next As I Lay Dying or whoever they thought were going to be big, and just, you know, taking a chance. So I think we got kind of got swept up in that, which is, you know, if you're a band from Cincinnati, Ohio, that's not a bad place to be. Like, no one else is gonna give us a chance. So, and, you know, we got to say we're on Victory Records. We recorded with Ken Susi from Unearth, which they had recorded with previously. They had like a connection there, but like, so that was a good experience too. Yeah, I can't really complain about Victory as much as I would like to. I know many other people have horror stories, and I'm fortunate that I didn't get the brunt of any of that. But yeah, it was fine.
No, that's cool. And I think it's interesting that you touch on that aspect of being a band on, you know, one of these labels that, you know, there is this kind of like illusion of, you know, what it's like to be on like a big label, which, I mean, for a moment there, for a hot minute there, Victory was certainly like a label to be reckoned with within, like, especially the underground scene. Cause I mean, shoot, like Earth Crisis, Snapcase, I mean, tons of bands, you know, were on that, on this label. And, but at the same time, a lot of, like you mentioned, kind of like these lower tiered level bands are also all along for the ride. And they're a business. Like, at the end of the day, they function like a business, and their main objective to some degree is to somehow make money, you know?
Right.
And not every band is going to be a huge success, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, as long as you guys walked away unscathed, you know, without like anything majorly bad happening, I'd say that that's a win. So that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't really owe any money or anything like that. It was kind of like, you know, if we recouped, cool. If not, then, you know, we didn't get anything, but we weren't out anything. So, you know, that's, I guess, the best I could ask for. We got on some big tours and got a lot of promo and got a music video on MTV out of it. So, you know, as far as, you know, things on the musician's bucket list, I can check a lot of those off. And I, you know, that's experience I probably wouldn't have had otherwise. So as much as I want to kind of, you know, shit on Victory, I can't really, at least from my perspective. But we were only on it for a couple of years. So, you know, not enough time to really get screwed.
Right. You didn't have enough time to get screwed.
Yeah. Like, had we stuck around, I'm sure we probably would have got it, but, you know.
I think that's a fair enough point for sure. But moving into more of like your work, I'd like to dig into this latest, you know, record that you put out, which I know is going to be put out on vinyl. I think it's, well, it's, is it out now or is it going to be out soon via Friend Club Records on vinyl?
It's going to be out soon. I think it's in the pressing process right now, which is obviously every, all this distribution is getting hit hard with, you know, just delays. So it's coming. Right.
But this was a record that you put out independently at first, digitally, and you partnered with Friend Club Records. And if memory serves, there was like a Kickstarter campaign to raise funds for the vinyl, right?
Yes.
Right.
And we hit our goal and we are now going to be receiving vinyl.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, it's always, it's weird. Like the Kickstarter thing, I know for some people can be like kind of a hot button issue because some people think that it's kind of like, you shouldn't use that as a crutch. But right. at the same time, it's like, well, dude, you know, it's just a pre-order, basically, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially in the music space, it's a good way to garner interest because, you know, if you don't get any pre-orders, then, well, maybe we shouldn't be doing this.
Well, right. Like, I know that I certainly tried to be an early adopter of that method. In, you know, like, back in the day when I started off my record label, that was, like, the first thing I did was... I was like, okay, I want to see if people are even interested, you know, in doing this because I don't want to throw a bunch of money at something and then all of a sudden like, oh, nobody cares, you know? Right. So, but no, congratulations. I mean, that's great. I mean, I've listened to the album. It's great. I think it's awesome, dude. You know, I was very curious. As I was listening to it, it kind of reads almost like an autobiography of like the last few years. Right. I'd love for you to kind of talk to me about like the themes around the album.
Basically the kind of theme that I was going from that album and the album I put out before, which is called Of Age, is just kind of a meditation on getting older and existing into an art space or, you know, a space that's predominantly youth oriented, and kind of the struggles that come along with that. You know, I have a day job where I'm an IoT support specialist. So this is kind of my go-to hobby after work and just kind of, you know, being in bands and having, you know, everyone, you know, growing up and you play music, you only have that spot in the back of your mind, like, hey, I could do this full time. And, you know, that's the dream. But when the dream, you know, doesn't come true, like, but you still want to play music, that's kind of, well, now what? Especially right. when you're pushing 40, as I am. I have 1 year left, 1 year and 23 days left in my 30s. So it's just kind of, I'm getting old and I still want to be creative. I still want to make music, but how do you do that in a youth-oriented space?
Yeah. Well, that's cool. I mean, I like the fact that it kind of like ebbs and flows. Like there's some high energy tracks. There's some more like what seems like you said, like kind of a meditation type of tracks where, right. you know, it's kind of, it seems like you're like reflecting and like being like very right. introspective. I did want to ask you, there was one song called Don't Care. And is there a nod to Refused in there?
There is a actual sample of Refused.
Yeah, right. Okay, yeah, yeah. Well, because I'm pretty sure that that's a sample as well. You know, that
right.
But very meta. Yeah. No, but I caught it and I'm like, okay, this guy. Yeah, I love it. That's cool. When Tim came to me with your stuff, he kind of described it as like a mix between Lupe Fiasco and Death Grips. And I got to say, like, I'd say that's pretty spot on. I mean, like, but those are pretty divergent, you know, styles within, you know, right. hip hop, you know, because Lupe Fiasco is a little bit more like funk, like kind of soul, you know, driven. Yeah. And then Death Grips is just fucking Death Grips, you know, it's like, it's all over the place. But I got to say, like, the quality of the production and like the different avenues that you seem to take with the backing track and like the production quality, it does give hints to both. So I wanted to ask you, so besides, I mean, maybe those two are key influences for you, but what else would you cite as like big influences for you in terms of this music that you're doing?
Pretty much like my philosophy on making music is like, I'm pretty much inspired by everything and anything. Like Eugenius is, you know, obviously a hip hop project, but as far as influences, everything is Game. Like I love, you know, obviously we said punk, metal, hardcore, indie rock, jazz, anything that I kind of come across that I'm kind of inspired to make music around is fair game. Just kind of filtered through hip hop and rap. I always, in my head, I always think I'm like a film producer. And so a lot of songs are kind of having like cinematic qualities to it. There's fireworks going off.
Of course there are.
Yeah.
So like, what is it? Like the 7th of July now? Like,
yeah, that's Christ, yeah. Appropriate thing to do at 10 o'clock. But yeah, like I think a lot of music has a cinematic quality because I love film scores. My dream job would be to make music for films or video games or stuff like that. So I kind of funnel that through Eugenius as well. But yeah, just pretty much any record or any art piece or any movie that I come across is fair game for inspiration.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, I genuinely do see where you're saying with like the almost like a filmmaker's mentality when it comes to the way that you're producing these records, like, cause it's almost like you're taking somebody on like a journey, you know? And I mean, like with respect to this record, how I mentioned earlier that it almost like read like an autobiography almost, like, I think that that's even like a better way to put it with respect to, it's like, you know, there's this film going on that you just can't watch, you know, but audibly it's taking you through that journey. Right. Yeah. And I think that that's really cool about how you can do that with a piece of music, you know, without having to have the accompaniment of the visual, you know? So I think that was really awesome. Yeah.
A couple years ago, I put out an instrumental album called The Architect under my normal name, Phil Smith. And it was pretty much that whole synopsis. I kind of made a movie in my head and just made music that I thought would go to that movie. And I think it turned out pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds crazy when I explain it to people, though. They're like, what?
Right. Well, I mean, that's kind of like one of the interesting things about like rap and hip hop that I think, you know, I don't know a ton about, but it almost feels like unexplored territory sometimes. And, you know, again, that could very well just be like my ignorance of not having as well of a understanding of like the, especially like the underground hip hop scene. But, you know, like when you think of like punk or like rock or metal, there's all these different like types of kind of small niche genres that fall within the category of like rock or metal, right? Like you have prog rock, or you have like psych rock, or you have like garage rock, or like any number of things. But like, what about prog hip hop or like prog rap or like something like that? Like, I mean, I'm sure that exists like in its own right. It's just not being like exposed in that manner, right?
Can I coin myself prog rap? Is that, can we do that right here?
We could. No, and actually I that's what I was thinking of when I was listening to your record. I was like, this is kind of like this like a thematic storyline that seems like very linear, you know, right, to a degree. So it almost reads like a prog album, you know, where like when you listen to like something like Coheed and Cambria,
right,
there's like this overarching like storyline that involves like characters and like all this stuff. And, you know, I certainly don't mean to read that far into it if it's not the case, but I don't know. I feel like that's something that is happening and has been happening within the world of rap and hip hop, but it isn't being exposed in the same way. Like, I think one of the only real elements of hip hop, or maybe like side genres within hip hop, that's really gotten any like real attention has been like this kind of emo hip hop, you know, with like, oh God, why can't I think of their names? But like, cause to be honest, I don't really listen to a lot of those artists, but there's been a ton of them that just blew up, you know, and they're everywhere, and that's awesome. But at the same time, like, well, what about like all the other artists within hip hop that are doing like more like the heavier shit, or like the more progressive, you know, kind of stuff, or the more experimental stuff. But I don't know. I think it's really cool. And I'm really stoked that you guys were able to get that on vinyl, because every album deserves to be on vinyl as far as I'm concerned.
And it's been kind of like a bucket list thing for me to have like a, you know, a actual physical release that I didn't put out myself. And so I am super happy that they decided to do this. I cannot be more appreciative to Friends Club, Robin and Dan and Drew. Yeah, it's been really awesome.
That's killer. Yeah. You know, so you are working, or you did production work with Nathan Gray's new record, and he's originally from the band Boy Sets Fire, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. How did that come about?
So, I don't know. Early 2020, when all the protests were going on, I made a song called Breathe Sleep, which I actually sampled a Boy Sets Fire song. I sampled like a little snippet of his vocals, and I just sent it to him, where I was like, hey, if someone were to sample my vocals, I kind of want to know, just because they might think it's cool, they might think it's lame, but you know, just know, hey, it's out here. So I just emailed him, hey, you know, just wanted to let you know, I made this, enjoy. And he actually emailed me back and said, hey, this is really cool. Like, you know, thank you. Couple months later, he expressed that he wanted to do some collab work. So I was like, sure, of course. Like, I'll always collab with, you know, a band that I've loved. And so after that, he called me again and said, hey, I want you on my album. And so he brought me down to Baltimore to record, and I recorded a verse and did some vocal production on the upcoming Nathan Gray album, Rebel Songs.
It's awesome. Yeah. are there any other artists that you'd kind of just really love to like collaborate with down the road, or that you're kind of actively seeking?
Not really. It was kind of just a random thing that happened. I've sampled other artists before. I've sampled Converge multiple times. I think Coalesce somewhere in there. But yeah, it was just a weird happenstance, and I might be having a bigger role in the Nathan Gray Experience. I don't know if I can really talk about it yet, but just be on the lookout for that.
Sure.
But yeah, it's been interesting. It's been an interesting year.
Yeah.
That things are actually just happening.
Yeah. Are you currently working on a follow-up record to Midlife?
I am. I actually finished vocals for the first song today. It should be out sometime this year, hopefully, fingers crossed.
Cool. Awesome. Do you have any plans to take this on the road?
Not really. I know a lot of my fall is going to be taken up with other projects. The Nathan Gray project will be some of that. I do have a couple shows scheduled. I'm playing Saturday here in Cincinnati, and I'm playing the Nathan Gray album release in Philadelphia on November 5th. But other than that, I'm trying to kind of lay low a little bit and wait to see how the whole show live thing is going to check out with COVID and everything.
Right. Yeah. Leading up to the pandemic, were you pretty active doing live shows with Eugenius?
Yeah, I would say I would play at least once a month, maybe a lot more. And COVID kind of just put a squash there.
Right. Yeah, I'm curious. So within like the kind of hip hop and rap, you know, world, I mean, is that kind of where you were kind of targeting a lot of your focus, or were you kind of trying to just kind of get in where you could get in, like within like the punk or the hip hop, or like the hip hop or the both, you know? I mean,
when I first started, I had a couple shows, and it was predominantly in the hip hop scene. Like I met a friend of mine named Abia, who's also on Midlife. She introduced me to kind of the kind of underground steady hip hop scene. And so when I started out, I was kind of mainly doing hip hop shows, but with a little bit of, you know, punk shows from friends that had bands that wanted me to play. I would say now it's more targeted towards the punk community, mm-hmm. and mainly because the music has gotten a little more unpredictable, and it usually doesn't go over as well as I'd like it to at hip hop shows.
Okay.
Not that I won't play them. It's just, you know, usually it's not what they're wanting to hear. So I usually try to target like more band, you know, centric shows.
I see. Does Eugenius, when you perform live, is it just you with like a backing track, or do you have like accompanying musicians with you?
It's just me and my lowly iPad, DJ iPad.
DJ iPad.
Yeah, that's it. Just me, a mic, and the old iPad.
Nice. Yeah, because, you know, part of the reason why I asked this is because, you know, I've been to, you know, many shows over the years that have featured, you know, more like traditional, like either indie rock or punk rock or like heavier, like rock centric bands or artists. And then they'll also have like a hip hop artist, like POS, for example. You know, I remember I caught a show. It was Russian Circles, POS, The Velveteen, and Minus the Bear. I mean, that's a wild lineup.
That's a great lineup.
Oh, it's a great lineup. Yeah. And I'm all for it. Like, cause all four of those bands are freaking awesome. Like POS is fantastic. You know, Russian Circles is one of the best like post-rock bands I've ever seen in my life. You know, Velveteen are like the homies, and then like Minus the Bear. I mean, come on, Minus the Bear.
Right.
But like, those are the type of shows that I kind of crave. You know, the ones where you go and like, it's not just this homogenized, like every band sounds exactly the same, you know, it's 4 hours of the same shit. And you're just like, oh, I only came to see one band. You know, it really keeps things much more interesting.
Right.
You know, and I personally would really love to see more of an adoption, especially in like these festivals, you know, now, like I know that some of the bigger festivals are better at this, but I would personally like to see even like punk rock bowling, you know, or fest, or, you know, even like these punk and drublic festivals that are happening, you know, maybe incorporate some more, you know, rap or hip hop artists. And, you know, the point that you made, which I think is a very valid point, is that, you know, within the world of hip hop and rap, and even within the world of rap of punk, the audience kind of does dictate who is going to be presented at these shows, right? So, you know, I'm not gonna expect that, you know, Metalcore Fest 2020 whatever is going to predominantly feature a bunch of rap and hip hop artists, but there may be like, I mean, like, what is it? Ice-T's band, Body Count.
Body
like,
Count,
they'll be there, you know? But that's a metal band, though. Like, that's not Ice-T, you know, rapping over metal. It's like him being a fucking metal performer, you know? So, but anyway, I'd kind of like to hear your kind of a take on that. Like, what do you think could be, like, improved upon in that nature? If there is anything that could be improved upon, or...
I think the younger generation, the generation that's coming up, I think it will be more of a thing, mixed genre shows. I know when I was a kid, that was my favorite shows, is when you get like an emo band, a punk band, the ska band, like, you know, just not the same genre. I think a lot of kids coming up now listen to a lot more things. And so when they get to the age where they're like, hey, I want to start putting in shows, they're going to start reaching to, you know, it's just going to be whoever I like, instead of just, it has to be this. I think the whole, you know, this is a punk show and this is a metal show, that's kind of my generation's hang up. It's like, well, we're targeting this demographic, so this is the bands that we want. But I think I start to see that slowly erading with the younger crowd. They don't really care as much. They just kind of see music as music, which is kind of where you want to be.
Because I mean, I'm right there with you. Like, if we could have more shows that the standard was to have a mixed bag, you know, and that would be considered acceptable, you know, I would personally really enjoy that.
Right.
But like you pointed to, I think that sometimes these vehicles that we now use to try to not only grow our audiences, unfortunately kind of leave us having to pigeonhole, you know, ourselves, you know, like for, you know, for an example would be, you know, when we try to utilize social media, right? Mm-hmm. Now these algorithms, they feed off of interaction and they feed off of, you know, commenting and like sharing, like everything like that. Well, who's going to share and comment on your stuff? It's more than likely the handful or however many percent, like whatever small percentage of people that are really into what you're doing. Right. And everyone else, like, just kind of, it falls by the wayside. So just as a byproduct of the way that these things are built, it automatically kind of typecasts you, which forces you to not only have to pay to play to expand your audience, but you have to fight against it now, you know, mm-hmm. and that's a real shame because like, to bring it back to like, to what I was talking about earlier, like Lollapalooza, you know, like back in the day was really great about incorporating, you know, hip hop and metal and punk. Right. And, you know, they had bands like Fishbone on, freaking Fishbone. They're like, what the hell are they? You know, who knows what Fishbone is, but they're awesome, you know? And so it doesn't matter what they are. It's just like, they're Fishbone and that's it.
Right.
And I think in a perfect world, we would start to feel more like treating every band like Fishbone, you know, versus treating them like, oh, they fit into this box, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So, I think a lot of people are starting to, like, was it Riot Fest this year has, I think Lupe Fiasco is playing, and I think maybe Run the Jewels and some other hip-hop artists. And I think as some of these fests grow, because now fests are a little bigger thing, and hip-hop is obviously probably one of the biggest genres, you know, I think people are trying to, they can't escape it anymore. They're kind of like, well, in order to, you know, get maximum people out, we're going to have to kind of merge some more genres. And I think that's good for everybody.
Absolutely. Yeah. Cause you're totally right. Like hip hop is massive.
Right.
I mean, it's beyond, you know, the scope of like, I mean, I'd say, well, I mean, I don't necessarily know if I would say that hip hop is bigger than punk, but I would say that on a cultural level, it's right there, you know?
Well,
and if not, like, bigger, you know?
Yeah, and like mainstream just music, like when's the last time we had like a true like rock star, you know, like, or like a giant band that just not like, you know, Nirvana or Metallica. It's been a while since like bands have really garnered that. It's all been rappers, it's all been, you know, Drake, Kanye, Kendrick, like that's all you kind of hear about in the upper atmosphere of pop music, or, you know.
No, totally. I mean, like there, you know, there's obviously like entire radio stations and like, you know, clothing brands and television shows and like movies, you know, it's a phenomenon that has certainly taken over the global consciousness. It's everywhere. You know, it's consumed literally all the time in front of everyone. And it's kind of a shame that it's not being incorporated more often into some of these smaller niche areas, but at the same time, I think there is total validity with the idea that, like, if you have a punk rock festival, it can just be a punk rock festival. It doesn't have to include hip hop artists, but I think that we're only doing ourselves a favor if we start to embrace, you know, some of the artists that kind of do cross those lines, you know, a little bit more. And I do think you're right that we're starting to see a little bit more of that. Yeah. Which is great.
I think it'll continue.
Yeah. But well, and I think especially like if we have more artists who are like yourself, like who are blending those styles and like really bringing in like those nods to Refuse or like, you know, or working with somebody like Nathan Gray from like Boy Sets Fire or something. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Well, you know, I appreciate all that info. I want to move on to, you know, the last couple of questions that I like to ask every artist or every person that I have on the show.
I'm ready.
You think you're ready? Yeah. Did you prep for this?
I prepped.
Okay. So the first one is, who are some artists that you really think people need to have on their radar right now?
My number one, I'm going to say, is a band called Clipping. I don't know if you're aware. It features two sound designers and an MC who has garnered a lot of attention because now he's a big name actor now. You can't escape him pretty much, named David Diggs. But they're probably one of my favorite bands currently. Just great noisy industrial immaculately produced hip hop. Anybody likes storytelling or just great production and noisy beats, yeah, look them up. There's a punk band called Soul Glow, who I just got turned on to maybe a couple months ago, but they put out a phenomenal record this year. I don't want to like pigeonhole them as like Bad Brains-esque, but there are some similarities. Just maybe a more modern, you know, harsher take on, you know, what Bad Brains does. A couple of hip hop records I love. There's a group called Arm and Hammer, which consists of two MCs, Lucid and Billy Woods. They've been on a streak. The last three albums they've put out, it's just all kind of been phenomenal. Just kind of low key, very dark, very broody, kind of esoteric hip hop. I want to say a band called Cloud Rat, I've had the pleasure of playing with a while ago, but they're like a death grind, a little bit of experimental edge to it, like very good stuff. Yeah, I think that'll do it.
Nice. And they were called Cloud Rat?
Yes.
Okay, nice. Yeah, that's an interesting name. I love it. Yeah. No, Clipping I've heard of. I can't say that I know their music, but I've heard the name for sure. Soglo's fantastic. Totally right up there. That's killer. But yeah, I'll check out Cloud Rat for sure. And then you mentioned the other
Arm and Hammer.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'll check them out for sure. Thank you. I appreciate the list. Mm-hmm. I will try to find and add links to all of them as well. And then, yeah, so here's the final question. I know everyone either loves or hates this or a mixture of both, but if you had to narrow your, you know, music collection down to only five records that you could keep and listen to for the rest of your life, if you were like trapped on an island or something like that, what would they be?
Number one that I have to put number one always is Michael Jackson's Thriller.
Okay.
Just it's been one of my favorite records since I was able to listen to records, and that just never changed and never budges. Number two is I'm gonna put Converge's Jane Doe. It's not my favorite Converge album, but I think it's the most complete Converge album. Like if I was trapped somewhere and I needed a good punk representation, I think that would be my go-to. Number three would be Radiohead's OK Computer. I'm a big Radiohead fan, so it's a great album. That's the only thing I can say.
I mean, it's kind of a perfect album. Yeah.
Yeah, like it's nonstop front to back, just a great album. You know, never get tired of it. Number four, I'm gonna put Kanye West's The College Dropout. It's a great album. Even though Kanye's gone off the rails in the past couple years, you can't deny that that's just, you know, a legendary hip hop album. Yeah. Number five, I had a tie. It's gonna be either Green Day's Dookie or Bjork Vespertine. Okay. Depending on what day you ask me, it would float between. I'm leaning a little more towards Bjork just because it's just a phenomenally produced album, and I love it. But Green Day's Dookie holds a special place in my heart as, you know, the album that taught me how to play guitar. And I could probably, not having to touch guitar in months, probably play that whole record front to back right now. Please don't ask me.
Yeah. Like Dookie is, like some people like, you know, say that Insomniac's like their best record, you know, but that Dookie's the one that they would want though, you know, because it's like just so accessible and so easy to like listen to, you know. kind of like, you know, the argument with Weezer with like Pinkerton being a better album than Blue, but Blue being the one that you would want, you know?
See, I think Insomniac's probably the better album, but Dookie had just the songs, the bangers on it. Like, you can't deny it.
Well, and I appreciate that you were kind of leaning more towards Bjork, because I love Green Day just fine, but that album is incredible as well. And like, I mean, talk about another like kind of just transcendent record. Just like, dude, how did somebody come up with this? Like,
I don't know. It's not dated at all. I listened to it like, you know, a couple days ago, and it's like, this could have came out yesterday, and it still sounds, you know, pretty
dope. Right. Yeah. Absolutely. That's a great list. I certainly appreciate it. But yeah, Phil, it's been a pleasure talking with you. You know, I'm super stoked for the success of the record, and I'm glad that it's being put out on vinyl. I'm certainly stoked for when it comes out, because I'm probably gonna pick one up. I think your music's dope, dude, and like, keep it up. I can't wait to hear what you come up with next.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. And you know, everyone check his Bandcamp out, order a record. I'll add the links to everything. But yeah, Phil, pleasure to talk to you. Talk to you soon.
Me too. Thanks. Bye.
Taste. Run out of space with no room left to alienate. The messes I make are now just commonplace. I cleaned up my act, but now just hidden in a fallen rank. The badge of honor that I pinned to my sleeve means nothing with a limp body polyp on the heat. The hill I led on was way too steep. The back of the sheep, the thinner the fleece, the lighter the sleep, the harder the beat, the core for beats, the melody's sweet. Try to keep clear, but I cannot delete the terror bites at my drive as it slows to a creep. As I try to hold on to the stored memory, the screen ends in error code with a blink on the screen. Behind the scenes, it's taking its toll. Maturity stole a chance to get free. No bail on parole, the infinite scroll. The only thing I have left to hold, the wrong door only shows what I already know. Illuminates the lows, ain't ever fight to echo. The chambers growing cold, staying like it's bumping the walls. Look up like I glitch in the code between a one and zero. I'm just a ghost as my marching the road, and I'm really starting to lose the hole. And all the stories I told myself to comfort and console my ego. And it's getting pretty old and feeling lost and alone. It's not a home when the world to roam. Out of my zone and my element, fading relevance, just a remnant. Let the reminisce, lightweight prominence, broken promises and unlearned lessons left over from adolescence. Now a crisis in midlife, ripe for manifesting. And I think that I'm done stressing. I'm glad I made a dent, even if it's a bad impression.